Welcome to Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
And today we have Molly with us. Molly is a fighter and a young mother. And she caught our attention when she made an Instagram post about how her training changed when she became pregnant and how she no longer saw being a woman as a weakness. We want to come back to that point. But first of all, can you tell us how you got into MMA, Molly?
Yeah, of course. So I used to compete on horses. That was my first love of the sport. So I had horses and I'd do show jumping and stuff like that growing up. And then I had a bit of time out of that. I got a little bit chubby, I'll be honest. Thought I should probably do something. So I started with like a boxer size class and then just fell down the martial arts rabbit hole and gave a few different classes a go until I finally thought, I think I want to take this a bit seriously. And at that time, Ronda Rousey was up and coming and women's MMA was a thing. So I found a decent gym, which is where I'm at now, trained for a year, had my first fight, and here we are today.
but hold on. You trained, you started BoxFit, right?
Yeah, like boxer size, like a fitness class. And then I was like, I like hitting pads, so I'm going to go to like a boxing session, then kickboxing, then tried some traditional martial arts, a bit of wrestling, and then MMA done it all, and I thought, perfect.
And you had your first MMA fight within a year?
Yeah, I trained for a year, and then I had my first MMA fight.
So how did you get from horses into getting punched in the face?
It was an intentional transition. I just had a few years out of like competitive horse riding because of exams and stuff at school. Mm. And then, yeah, when I started at Five Elements, which is where I'm at now, I was 17. And then literally 2 months after my 18th birthday, I had a fight. Yeah, I just kind of enjoyed it. I loved the adrenaline. I loved the challenges. I learned so much about myself. And I'm an all or nothing kind of person. So once I was like, I like this, wow. Then I was training up 6 days a week and there we are. So.
I mean, we recently tried with Shanti to do some boxing. I mean, some kickboxing. And mm-hmm. I've been talking with her after the class and we were like, I just ate a full one on the face. I was like, it took me a while to realise what's happening.
I still don't like getting hit, don't worry.
It is like, it's really deserved. I got like hit right between the eyes and I was just like, I just went completely cross-eyed. I was like, what? I don't know.
Where am I?
I need to sit down. I don't know what's going on. But
horrendous,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible. I was like, okay. I don't like this. And it's suddenly like, okay, no. Arms up. So talk us through how old are you now?
I'm 23.
And so how far into your MMA career did you fall pregnant? And what was that experience like? How did you make it work? How did you train with your pregnancy? Because that's one of the biggest things. It's like everyone's scared to get pregnant because they're like, oh no, it'll interrupt. It'll get in the way. Like I have to change.
Yeah, it was something that we had a lot of conversations about. I personally didn't want to wait until I'd finished a fight career. Personally, I want to go pro, see as far as I could take it. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to retire probably like mid-30s then if I have like a good career. Well, I'd read a lot about women's fertility and weight cutting and the impact of fighting. And you give everything else to this sport. I didn't want to give a chance to have a family to the sport. I didn't want to risk that. She's like, okay, like, do you freeze eggs or do we have a family younger? And it's like a really hard position to be in. But then obviously like Michelle Waterson had a baby, got back to her career. And so women are doing it. I can't say one of the greats have done it with a child yet, but there's got to be one. So I thought, no, I think let's do it like soonish, like before we go pro. I wanted to have a baby before I went pro, but definitely like mid-AMI career, because then I could get back, have a few more amateur fights, then we talk about going pro. It was like a lot of conversations, and you know what, like there isn't a perfect time. You could always be more financially stable. Your relationship could always be better. Oh, the weather could be better. Like, but there's definitely better times, but there's never a perfect time. So I just thought, let's do it. And if anyone can do it, I can do it. So let's do it. But training when I was pregnant was really, really difficult. Like, there's just not a lot of guidance. And this is a really big issue. My doctor told me, when I went to the doctor, said, I think I'm pregnant, you know, can I be referred to the midwife, blah, blah, blah. Yep, do a test, you're confirmed. I said, so the thing is, I'm an athlete. So what, you know, what should I, shouldn't, obviously I'm not going to get punched in the stomach, but what else, you know, can I still wrestle? You know, the baby's tiny, so it'll be good or no. And he said, no, just be lazy, go for a few walks and maybe swim. I was like, sorry? Be lazy? I train 2 or 3 times a day. I can't go for a walk and that's it. I'm going to go insane. And I got really upset. I was like, oh my God, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought I'd be training till I'm not pregnant. I've got to be lazy. I then saw like my first midwife and then she said, no, do whatever you were doing, just a bit less intense. Don't do anything new. So if you've never done kickboxing and you're pregnant, don't start it. But if you're comfortable, do it. You know your own body. That's also not great advice because things do need to be modified. And some of the issues I've had after having Odin is because I overtrained when I was pregnant. So just, I mean, how much detail do you want? Because I can go into this if you need me to.
All of the detail of the world.
Okay,
go on. Every detail.
So things like pelvic girdle pain, which is obviously the tilt of your pelvis changes with the weight of the baby. I'm going to give you a demo and everything.
Oh so my God, I love that. I absolutely love that. Go on.
So obviously with where your hips are now, that's quite level. When you've got this massive bump and the weight of it, you end up quite weak in your glutes and your back's quite arched. So you can tend to get a lot of pain across the front of your pelvis. Now, what makes that worse is a lot of things on one leg or split squats. So can you imagine I'm doing high kicks 8 months pregnant? Not ideal. And then obviously you're carrying the weight of your baby on your pelvic floor muscles. That's a lot of weight. So if you're doing a lot of jumping and high impact, that's a lot of pressure through there. So, yeah. Since having Odin, I found a few different places for guidance. So I would now go back and tell myself, go and see a pelvic floor physiotherapist, a specialist, get them to check you, get them to give you the all clear on what exercise you can and can't do. Only work with someone that's, you know, antenatal qualified in terms of strength and conditioning. Have a meeting with your coaches, like you need them on the same page. I'm someone you have to pull back, not kick up the arse. So if everyone's going, oh, you're not doing burpees today because you're pregnant, wait, I'm now going to do 100 burpees. So you kind of need like a team to support you. And that made training really, really difficult because I didn't really have that support. I didn't have all the knowledge I have now. You know, my midwife said, oh, make sure you do your pelvic floor squeezes, you know, 3 times a day, otherwise you'll be wetting yourself all your life after you have a baby. Well, I mean, I train 6 hours a day. I don't think I need to tone my pelvic floors or my core muscles any more than I did. But me being me, athlete mindset, oh no, you say 3 times, I'll do them 6 times a day, no problem. Well, then I've created really overly toned pelvic floor muscles. Another demo for you. This is your full range of motion. I'm going to need a bicep curl of your pelvic floors. You've got to be able to relax your pelvic floors to let your baby pass through your vagina, right? Most athletes, horse riders, dancers, gymnasts, fighters, overly toned muscles. So we're here and we're really strong at this high end range of motion, but go to there and we're not so good. So all I've done is made everything really, really toned. So then when it comes to giving birth or recovering, I'm so weak. So what I should have been told was you need to learn to relax your pelvic floors and engage them through the full range of motion. And make sure you're breathing through your exercises and you're not bracing. Maybe stop the one-legged stuff so much as you become more pregnant. You know, everyone just goes, oh, you're pregnant, don't do crunches. And that's not necessarily true. There's so many aspects. It's such a personal, individual thing. But the care that pregnant women receive is not a personal or individual thing. It's a textbooks thing. Everyone apparently follows the same order. And apparently everyone does the same exercises and is at the same level. So that made training when I was pregnant really, really difficult, but I did do really well in keeping quite consistent. I did adjust, like I didn't do my normal strength and conditioning. It would be a lot lighter and it moved through different phases through my different trimesters. So I really struggled the first trimester. You don't even look pregnant. No one even knows, but I've got no energy. I feel sick. So it was as and when I kind of felt like it. I still hit pads a lot. My second trimester, I felt really, really good. Loads of energy. People knew I was pregnant, which was easier to train with people. So I done quite a lot of weights and stuff, and still like a good amount of weight on the movements and stuff. It wasn't like I had to drop all weight and just do body weight stuff. But it was being a bit mindful. If I was really tired, it was resting, that sort of thing. And then in my third trimester, I'm then proper preggers, no denying it, waddling everywhere. It's okay, what do I feel like doing? I kind of feel like going and watching the boys wrestle and hit some pads. I want to go and lift some weights. Like, I'm stressed, I want to get out of my own head, I want to feel a bit savage, let's throw some weights around. Or okay, I want to go for a little run, I feel like I want to get a sweat on, so okay, I'm going to modify that, I'm going to do a walk jog. And that's, but I kind of self-guided that myself. I did have the support of an S&C coach, and obviously like Odin's dad is one of my coaches, so I'm really close with those people. But it was all kind of on me. How do I feel today? What do I want to do? There was no one to say, here's what's best for you for a long-term career in athleticism. There you go, that's a long answer.
Right.
Well, that's perfect.
Next question.
I watched some of your videos, and you had a big, massive belly, but kept sparring. My question is, did you trust everybody? And how physical was it? Did you wrestle, or was it just
pads? Okay. So I didn't trust everyone at all. Definitely not. I had like three of the boys that I trusted, and most of the training I did do was with Wes, who's Odin's dad. So I wrestled through the first trimester, and by wrestling, I mean I wasn't thrown at all. But there's like a picture of me like it's like a fireman throw, one of the boys, and I was like definitely about 12 weeks pregnant. But I really trusted them. Like, they were quite light in weight, they weren't like thick set boys. I knew that they could break full properly, and they weren't good at, you know, sometimes people just stiffen up or zig when you zag, you know, it happens. I didn't do any sparring when I was proper pregnant, but I would hit the boys, they didn't hit me. But I would do like Dutch style drills, so kicking, blocking, coming back. But again, I'd only go with someone I really trusted. I know their kicks were going to be so light, I wouldn't even have to block them in. Like, it wasn't going to do any damage at all. To make sure, I would only block high kick, I wouldn't be like doing any body kick work. Or if I was holding pads, I'd just like hold them out. So yeah, I kind of adapted it. It's just like using your logic and using your own boundaries. I didn't really stress a lot that my baby is going to be okay or not. Personally, I've never suffered from a miscarriage or anything like that, so I didn't have that kind of anxiety. My point of view was my body is built to carry a baby. And in hunter-gatherer times, I wouldn't be like sitting in the cave, like just not being able to do anything. I'd be out there doing a lot, you know? So we're a lot tougher than I think we realise. And modern day media has made pregnant women seem really, really delicate. And we're a pretty little petal, and we must sit nice and, you know, look glowy and pregnant and lovely. But actually, yeah, like, I could be pregnant and carry all my shopping bags in after going to the gym. I don't need a hand. It's fine, you know? Did I struggle to get up off the sofa when I was that much pregnant? Probably. But would I still hit pads? Yes, because I wanted to, and I felt like it was good for me and okay for me.
I mean, you seem to have really found some, like, retrospect is always much easier to see what's, you know, what was wrong or what was right.
Yeah.
But you seem to have like found like some answers to stuff, like you're talking about pelvic girdle. Where did you then find those sorts of answers? Was it because you were having a problem and then you had to go and find a specialist, or how were you exposed to that?
Yeah, so I had like a lot of pelvic girdle pain after, which most people, if they suffer from it when they are pregnant. But it was more after I had Odin, and I was getting back to doing like a little bit of movement. I want to say movement, because it was like just resistant band strengthening, walking, that sort of stuff. And then I just felt like something wasn't quite right in terms of the structure of my vagina and how it felt. Now, you never pay so much attention to your vagina until you have a baby, right? So it was easy to feel like I was like a paranoid first time mum. You know, I said to the doctors, I don't know if I would like a checkup. I've not, as well with COVID, I didn't have my normal support or checkups. I didn't have a lot of support after having the baby. And said, things don't feel quite right. I'd rather check. Well, you've just had a baby. Like, what do you expect? It's not going to feel the same. I was like, don't patronise me. Like, I know that. But also, I'm telling you, I know my body and something doesn't feel right, and I want to get back to an athletic career. So things need to be as optimal as they can be. So I ended up seeking out like some private healthcare help and saw a pelvic floor physiotherapist. And basically what I was diagnosed with was a grade one pelvic organ prolapse. I thought a prolapse was when someone's womb is hanging out their vagina and that's all that is and it's really rare. I was so wrong. One in two women suffer with some form of a prolapse and don't even realise. And it can be, I'm going to come in with another demonstration. So basically your pelvic floors are like,
please.
They're like a hammock. And so what they support is your bowels, your bladder and your cervix, your womb, right? So these are like a ligament kind of tissue. Now, depending on the collagen levels, genetics, muscular strength, all that sort of stuff, these will stretch when you have a baby. But because they're like a ligament tissue, they don't necessarily stretch back so great. So there's different forms of prolapses and there's different grades. Grade one is quite a minor prolapse and I'm really lucky to only be suffering from that. Grade four is something is hanging through the exit of the vagina, so it's protruding outside. And women have horrendous experiences. So you can either have a prolapse of if your own vagina, the floor of or the ceiling, and then you've got your cervix. So you could have a bulge on the floor, you could have a bulge on the ceiling wall, it could be the cervix that's dropped a lot lower, and those are all different types of pelvic organ prolapses. So mine came from having hypertonic pelvic floors that are two-toned. Because I was an athlete and I was really strong, that has caused a prolapse later on down the line. Athletes don't realise this. Women don't realise this. I was running 3 months after having the baby. That is not helpful for a prolapse. You know, like I didn't even know it was really a thing. And so I've had to find a balance between what training is okay for me, that I don't feel very symptomatic, I don't have a pain, I don't have a heaviness feeling. I'm lucky enough that mine's not very severe. I haven't suffered incontinence. It's not a visual thing. Honestly, it's only because I now pay so much attention to it that I probably notice the difference. But it's just an awful experience for women to go through. And the physiotherapist that I see has said, I have got elite marathon runners that are running with grade four prolapses. They can't hold their bladder or their bowels. They don't have any support, but they will not give up their sport. And why should they? Being an athlete with these overly toned muscles is really not helpful. Neither is the whole saying of, oh, you're fit, you'll push a baby out fine. Because you don't need to get fit to have a baby, first off, in terms of like labour. Your body does that naturally. But you then go into labour with that mindset that you've got to push this baby out. And all you're doing is bearing down and putting so much strain on these pelvic floors that, remember, that can't really be reversed. You don't actually need to push your baby out. It's called purple pushing. You're pushing, like your midwives are screaming, push, push, push. You're purple in the face. Get this baby out. Well, it's called the fetal ejection reflex. Your body will push your baby out. That is why women in comas who are in labour still have their baby even though they're unconscious. The muscles of your uterus, your abs, bring your baby down. You don't need any conscious pushing. And it increases the chance of a prolapse like 100-fold. So, yeah, I've come out with some troubles after having... Not troubles, just been enlightened since having Odin. And so I probably would have adapted my training a lot more. I would have dropped my ego a lot more. You know what? You do the 100 burpees. I'm not doing it because I want a long-term career and I'm protecting that. My breathing through lifting weights would have changed. I wouldn't have done the pelvic floor exercises I'd done. I probably would have worked more on relaxing them. But none of that is available. None of that is available to women, especially women who are athletes. it's such a niche thing. Women who are athletes that are having babies, there's just not the support there. So hindsight's fantastic because I can now educate other women and learn from my experience. But yeah, it's been more, I found training after having the baby harder than when I was pregnant. I was blissfully ignorant when I was pregnant.
Wow.
How long did it take you to go back?
So I think 2 weeks after having him, I was doing stuff with resistance bands, like just strengthening like my ankle, like shoulder mobility, maybe like a really bit of gentle stretching yoga. I was walking like 10,000 steps every day and I had him in his sling, so I was carrying him. I'd done that for ages. And then I think maybe like 6 to 8 weeks after having him, I would say I started training a bit. So I would like hip pads really light, but more just to like for my mental state. I just wanted to do a bit of what I enjoyed. It was more body weight exercises. It was loads of Pilates style movements for my core and bringing my abs back together, and trying to really readjust from that pelvic tilt. Because if your body gets used to that tilt, so that your back is tight, your glutes are weak, your abs are stretched. So if you're not, don't make a conscious effort to change that, you can sort of get fixed in that posture. So I'd done a lot of that sort of work. And then, I really tried to get back to training properly. I mean, I look back at like videos and I was like hitting the bag and like doing like low kicks and high kicks, excuse me, on the bag. And I'm like, oh my God, that's when you thought something might be wrong with how things were feeling down there. Or like looking back now, I wouldn't be doing that kind of training probably. But I think for also my mental health, I was so desperate to feel like myself again. I was so desperate to feel strong and capable and not delicate and not like I needed help. And I've got to get back to this career. And my goal that I set, funnily now looking back, was I wanted to fight again by the time Odin was a year old, because Michelle Waterson done it when her baby was 10 months. So I was like, right, by the time he's a year, I've got to have fought. Otherwise, I'll never get back to it because that's such a long time being out. Which is just, it's crazy. And then I look at the professional fighters, who was it? Mackenzie Dern and...
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember her name. Amanda.
And her opponent. Amanda Nunes' wife.
Yes, yeah. They fought and like, they're fighting like 4-6 months after giving birth and stuff. And it's just... I felt like my organs were going to fall out at that point. I cannot imagine getting thrown on the floor. But is there the pressure? Yeah. Are these women getting paid a maternity leave because they're athletes or not? Are sponsors dropping them because they've fallen pregnant and they've got to get back? Is it the pressure that I felt, and that's why I set that goal, that I must be back ASAP, because women, we can do it all and we can bounce back and all of that. Well, I mean, it's crazy. It is crazy. Your baby is only little for such a short amount of time. If you can be a successful athlete as a mother when your baby's 4 months, why are you doubting yourself that you could be a successful athlete as a mother when your baby's a year? It's crazy. It's just like the external pressure, I think. And I felt this thing of, oh my God, she done it when she was like 4 months postpartum and I can barely run 2 miles. Like, oh my God, I'm so not where I should be. I'm not training hard enough. And then so they've just replicated that pressure. So it's just, I just feel like it's this whole grey area, being a female athlete who wants to have a baby. You want to train because you've seen other people, but then everyone else acts like you're broken. Then there's, you know, is there the financial support that if you were employed in a company, you'd get 9 months maternity leave? It's just, yeah, it's crazy. It's been a wild ride. Mm. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, it sounds it. I mean, one of the biggest things which I'm, is that fact that also when you have a baby, how do you find the time, like on top of, I mean, this is something we'd love to talk about a lot, is like, how do you find the time to balance? Like suddenly, you know, you've got a career, you've built your life around you, like, and then there's a new person involved who has to be first. Like, how do you navigate that? How do you do it?
I think It's about, it's up and down. In these moments, I feel like I really want to moan about it and think, oh God, it's really hard. Like, and the boys are like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm like, you've only been at college for 4 hours and now you're training. Like, oh, I've not slept a wink. And my kid's in the corner crying because he wants breastfeeding again and I just want to train. And you're telling me you're tired. But I chose to have a baby. I chose this life challenge, right? It's about accepting that you don't get the ideal very often. Now, before having him, I would nap in between training sessions. I was doing a little bit of work, so I had some money in between training sessions. You know, if I forgot my food, that's fine. I could buy something out. Or that's the ideal. You don't get that with a baby. And when I was pregnant, I thought, I'm going to be structured and routinal because that's how training works. You know, that's your life when you're an athlete. You know, and I'll sleep train him so he sleeps. And, you know, all right, I know babies don't sleep the first, you know, couple of weeks, but give it, by the time he's 6 months, I'm sure he'll be fine. My baby didn't get the sleep memo. He wakes every hour to every 2 hours still, and he's over a year old. So I can't train full time like I did on that kind of sleep. It's not healthy. I'm not going to have a good career. I'm going to kill myself. So it's about accepting that you're not really going to get the ideal. Some days I boss it and things go smoothly. I hit all the training sessions. I've prepped the food. I don't forget nappies. He's in a good mood. He lets me train. He might have gone 3 hours before waking for a feed. You know, sometimes it goes really well. And then the next day he's bunged up with snot. He's grumpy, cries every time I put him down. Wants a boob every half an hour. I'm not going to train. So I think, okay, I was going to train 12 till 2. My baby needs me right now. No problem. There's got to be a time where he's at school and stuff and it'll be fair, right? But right now he needs me. So how about I go for a run, put him in the buggy and the running buggy and go for a run with him. Bit of fresh air does him good. Or wait till he's gone to bed and, okay, I couldn't do my S&T session today, but maybe I could do it tonight at home when he's in bed. Do I fit in 2 sessions tomorrow? It's just like that. You have to go with the flow. And I was not a go with the flow kind of person. I was uptight, rigid, structured. But you have to adapt. And now I do go, I don't have a choice. I have to go with the flow. But do I can't say I balance it well all the time. It's just accepting your priorities change. Sometimes I'm really busy with work. Sometimes my baby's really, really clingy and I can barely put him down. And sometimes those things don't need me so much and I can boss a week of training. It's just up and down, but there's always something you can do and it's having the discipline to do it. So worst case, I can't put him down. He's not well. Put him in the carrier. I'm going to go for like a big walk through the woods. It's up and down terrain. I can do squats with him in there. When he goes to bed, maybe I'll do some other stuff. I'll do some shadow boxing. Are one of the boys available tomorrow to train instead? Or have I got a family member that could watch him for an hour? You know, it's having the discipline to do it when you really, really don't want to do it, I guess. But that's just, you're like, if you haven't already got that in place in terms of habits before having a baby, then it's going to be tough. But if you're an athlete that is driving for success, you will have those traits in place. Otherwise, you wouldn't be choosing that lifestyle.
And how many sessions do you average a week?
At the moment? Okay. 5 to 6 sessions at the moment a week. It could be like a couple of runs. It could be a couple of S&C sessions and some pad work. I've been jumping in with the boys a bit more and they've been really quite good. I've explained a lot about the prolapse and what the intensity level is I can handle, and we've been working on some takedowns and they're really good, or, you know, just take the pressure off a little bit on the cage wall wrestling, whatever. So I've been doing that a couple nights a week as well. Yeah, it's getting there. It's trying to bridge the gap between training casually for fun and when you can fit it in to training full time and getting ready to jump back into a camp that I'm kind of dabbling with.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, so how much do you have to adapt? So what can you not do with a prolapse? What actually, at this point in your recovery?
If I could answer that clearly, my life would be a lot easier.
Oh.
Well, my pelvic floor physiotherapist doesn't know what MMA is, does she? She don't know what wrestling takedowns I can do. To be honest, it's a case of just going with how I feel. I'm not in the position to like do some heavy MMA sparring round or to be, you know, double legged into the cage or anything like that. So what I've got to at this point is probably the equivalent of like really light touch flow sparring, wrestling light drills. So just one for one takedowns or entrance to a takedown. I've done a few rounds of rolling with some of the lighter guys. And it's a case of, yeah, seeing how I feel. The change in your hormone as well around your period. So I have more symptoms, or I'm more symptomatic with a prolapse, sort of like 2 or 3 days before my period and then like the first day or two on my period. I mean, I remember before having a baby, when I was on my period and I had a heavy period, I feel like my uterus was going to fall out anyway. You know that like heavy feeling and you're like, what the devil is inside me? That sort of feeling. And I'd feel like that heavy dragging feeling and maybe things almost feel like a bit swollen on the inside. I'm a fan of check-in, so I'm not shy about saying it. It would almost feel like the walls of my vagina were quite swollen. And my cervix would be a lot lower and quite sensitive. I'd be sort of just quite sensitive and a bit sore. So on those days, I might go for a long walk. I might only do bodyweight exercises. I certainly wouldn't be doing any wrestling, any jumping around, any running, because everything's obviously a lot lower in that moment. So I want to protect it. Take a step back, do what I can, keep moving. But then after that, and especially when I come off my period, that's my best week. So I might add in a lot more high intensity stuff there. But that's only a recent thing that I've sort of maybe adapted my training around my menstrual cycle. Before, I was like, I'd allow myself a square dark chocolate and power through. Whereas now, it's just a lot different.
I was going to ask that. I was going to ask where you tuned in with your body before, when you started MMA, and when you were, because the way I perceived it is that you were surrounded by guys in the MMA gym, and you basically had to fit in and you had to go with their flow. So were you in tune with your body back then? Was there a chance that you would have your fight week when your PMS week is there, or your actual fight when your PMS week is there?
Yeah, so I was in tune with my body, and I've worked with the nutritionist Dean Kirk for quite a long time, and I would always say like my symptoms, like, oh, I've come on today, I'm really groggy, can't be asked for training, one load of chocolate. And he would say, okay, we're going to up your carbs the next 3 days. Like, don't weigh yourself at all. You'll freak out, you know, whatever. He was really supportive. In terms of like my training, like I was aware about how my body felt. I didn't have the confidence to put the boundaries in place. So, I mean, if we had like a fight team training session and we're doing stomach conditioning and I'm like, oh God, like I'm on my period, please be nice. And then the coach would be like, well, what if you fight on your period? I'm like, oh, I guess so. Just do it. You know, because I'm so competitive. I'm not going to sit out because I'm a woman and I'm on my period. Like, what a fucking pussy. Now, I'm like, hold the front door. You don't even have a vagina. You don't understand what I'm going through. Oh, I'm not joining in with that. I'll modify it and do something and not be lazy. And then I've had a few people like, oh, you know, a bit of banter. You know what gyms are like. Oh, yeah. Still using the baby as an excuse, blah, blah, blah. And I've said, please don't keep encouraging me, because it's really, really hard for me and my ego to not join in. And I'm looking after my health. I'm the only female fighter in this gym right now and the only female in our MMA class. You've got to support me. And they've been really good since. But it was like, it took quite a lot to get to that point and overcome that point, because I don't like feeling weak.
It does take a lot.
Help it. Because they don't understand at all.
And not many women.
Half of them don't want to talk about periods.
Not many women would say that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I got to a point where I'm like, do you know what? I'm fed up hiding my tampon up the sleeve of my top to run to the toilet to go and change my tampon mid-training session. I'm going to walk across the gym with it like a magic wand, because I'm not uncomfortable. And if yous are, yous need to get more comfortable with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know. They might have girlfriends, so
they might.
I think
you would think
the idea that it's, You think, but you know, again, you know, if that's our culture that we, you know, I do that, you know, in the gym, in our gym in London, like it used to be, well, it is, like it's a set, the toilet's separate. So to go to the loo with a pad or a tampon, you'd have to like, you know, obvious. You'd tie it down your top or something.
And then you have the thing, like, oh my God, what if it falls out while I'm walking across the mats?
But this, it's like, actually, it's like, well, we've all got, everyone's got women in their life, and everyone will have a woman in their life who's got a period once a month. So why is this?
Yeah, it's stupid. And I just got to the point where I was like, right, that's enough. I can't be bothered with, there's so much effort being a woman all the time. And I can't be bothered for it to be that much hard work. Hey, we're training. I'm a woman. I'm on my period. I'm going to change my tampon. I'll be back. You carry on. I can't be bothered to try so hard to not make anyone else feel uncomfortable whilst I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm comfortable being on a period. If yous are uncomfortable, that's a you thing. That's not a me thing.
Yeah, that's. I think and you said it in a nutshell.
And same goes for breastfeeding. Oh, same exactly.
Don't get me started on that.
I mean, shall we?
We can. I've only had one comment when I was out and I was by myself and I am a young mum feeding my baby by myself. And I think my response, I can't even remember what they said. Something like, oh, there's a feeding room over there. I'm like, oh, I mean, okay, say something else and I'll slap you with a spare boob, but no worries. Didn't say anything else.
They said feeding room, as in go there and feed your...
Yeah, because in like shopping centres, they have like a feeding room where you can heat baby's bottles or like a comfy chair. Oh, I've not got time in my life to go to a different room. I'm going to just whack a boob out, put the baby on it and carry on about my day. But yeah, I like that. So I'm waiting for the day I get a really nasty comment because I think I would really want to spray someone in the face with boob milk just to really wind them up if they're that uncomfortable. Hasn't happened yet.
So you say the only time that's happened is when you were alone?
Yeah.
And so if you're with your, assuming you might be with your, the father of your child or partner who then, that no one would then approach you if you were with him or something?
Probably not, which is more irritating, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly.
How did your family, what was your family's response to you training as a pregnant lady and then as a mother? What, did you have any...
Yeah, it was quite tough. So my family were like, oh, Molly, you've not got to be a hero all the time. You haven't got to train when you're pregnant. You know, you're going to cause some damage. And someone in my close family had a really, really late term miscarriage from placental abruption, I think it's called. And it's basically where the placenta comes away from the uterus wall. And that can be from impact. So they're all, it's quite a sensitive thing for everyone. I would let comments go over my head, to be honest. And I would keep saying, yeah, but you don't do what I do. I'm comfortable. This is like going for a walk for me. You know, I just got on with it, if I'm honest. And then I think, if you know me, you know I'm going to do it anyway. So I think they sort of gave up after some point. My family with me fighting now, I'm a mother. My nan's not a fan. She is quite traditional.
Nan would be.
No, they wouldn't be, but here we are. No, she really disagrees with it, I think. The whole training's one thing, fighting something else, you've got a mum. Oh, he won't be going, will he, when you fight? Absolutely, he will be. He's going to be my cheerleader. That's really, you know, that's really bad. You're teaching him violence. A gym is no place for a baby to grow up. He needs to be with children all the time, and that's a really bad atmosphere for him, blah blah blah. She doesn't know the sport. She doesn't know what an amazing community it is, that he's grown up watching people chase their dreams. And one of the really important things that I want to teach my child is that you need to be disappointing everyone else before you disappoint yourself. So I'm not going to give up my dream for fear of disappointing everyone else. I'm going to be a mother and a fighter. I will go out of my way to disappoint all of those before I give up on that. So that's what I'm teaching him in, you know, I'm his template for life, for an adulthood, for a role model, for anything, you know. I think most of my family know I'm going to fight again, and I think they think I will have a few fights, nip it in the bud, probably have more kids. When I say I'm going back because I want a career and stuff, even my own mum, I've like heard her say, like, I think she'll have a few fights and then maybe, you know, she needs to get it out of her system. But that's fine. None of them thought I was going to have a baby at home with no pain relief either, but we'll see.
Okay, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, please, okay. go on. Please talk about that.
The Western medical industry, I'm not a massive fan. When it comes to pregnant people, so quick to interfere. I mean, from when I was 38 weeks pregnant, my due date was at 40 weeks. Due date, only 5% of babies are born on their due date, and they have the audacity to say that my baby was late. You got it wrong. But they would offer things like different types of induction and, oh, we'll give you a stretch and sweep, which is basically a midwife shoving her fingers up there, trying to force your cervix to open a little bit so you go into labour earlier. Why? I'm not uncomfortable, I'm not suffering, there's no risk to the baby. I know no idea why that is routinely offered. It's ridiculous. And I'm not ill. I'm not sick and I'm not broken, so why would I go to a hospital? Back in the day, everyone would have their babies at home. If a dog is having puppies, you don't take it to the vet. You leave it comfy in the corner. You're there in case they need you. Let them have the puppies. Like, I was designed to have a baby. My body, you know, evolution, clearly we do quite a good job. So I don't need 7 different people getting involved in that. And how am I supposed to feel relaxed and comfortable when I'm strapped on my back, under bright hospital lights, no idea what's going on, why it's coming out of me, and you keep shoving pain relief at me until I accept it and telling me where to go, what to do, how to move? Not a fan. So I had him in the comfort of my own home, and it's fantastic.
What was it like in terms of, because obviously, like, there's always I completely hear you, like, there's always a, there's a lot of like medicine which often seems to sort of get in the way, but also I guess like there's a time and a place, like if you are in trouble, that's when it can save your life. But as a healthy
I was really, really low risk. Also though, things statistically there's a bigger chance of complications to happen if you're in hospital when you're in labor, because the hormone responsible for a really optimal birth is oxytocin. Oxytocin is the hormone when you eat your favourite chocolate bar, when you have an orgasm, when you pet your favourite dog. That feel-good feeling, get a PB run, you know what I'm talking about, that feeling. That is the hormone responsible for labour going as smoothly as it could possibly go. How are you going to feel that in hospital? You're not, are you? Like, I was at home, I had candles, I had bunting that I made, I had my favourite snack, I had my playlist. That made me feel good. Therefore, there's less chance of something going wrong when you're in that kind of zone than if you're in a hospital room hearing the lady next door screaming when she's giving birth. So statistically, there is less chance of complications. Also, that's what ambulances are for. So much going wrong, need to go
we
in.
We did have...
Blue light it.
Yeah. We did have a pelvic physio talking to us about, you know, being the need to be feeling comfortable, and she was talking about, you know, having your playlist ready, you know, having the pillows you like, and I did ask, how are you meant to do all of these things in a hospital? Very
it's
difficult.
A lot harder. I think everyone should consider a home birth, even people with high BMIs, even with people who've had C-sections before. There's plenty of success stories. If you don't want to have your baby at home, do it at a hospital. Take your fairy lights, take your playlist, take your speaker, take your favourite pillow, take your lavender pillow spray. So you can kind of create that. For me, I wasn't going anywhere near a hospital. And they were actually, at the time, the trust of my area was cancelling home births. And I was told I might not be allowed a home birth. And I was like, okay, no worries, don't come to me. But if I want to birth my baby at home, that's where I'll just birth. If I want to walk into the woods by myself and have my baby, that's what I'll do. Like, you that's fine. If you're not going to come out and support, that's fine. I'll have my baby by myself and I'll ring you when they're here. So that's something I even looked into. It's called free birthing, where you basically birth without medical professionals present, whether it's intentional or it's before they arrive, whatever it is. I was not going into hospital. I knew in my instinct, my primal instinct, my baby was fine. I knew I was healthy. I trusted my body. I prepared a lot for labour. I researched it. I knew the science behind it. I knew what to do if the cord was wrapped around the neck, what to do if he was breech, what positions to get into, natural forms of pain relief. I was not going near a hospital, but not everyone sees things that way.
Mm-hmm. How do you plan it? Like, what is exactly the procedure of, you know, home?
I said I'll be having my baby at home. No, I did write a birth plan and it was really, really detailed. And my midwife, like, bless her, she was quite good. I changed midwives 3 times until I found the one I was happy with. The first ones weren't so supportive. Their level of care was really impersonal. So I was really happy with my midwife, Sally, love her. I showed her my birth plan and she giggled. And I was like, oh, don't, Sally, why are you giggling at me? And she was like, no, I really like it, because if you don't give me every detail of what you would like in the ideal birth, how am I supposed to help facilitate that for you? So I had an ideal birth plan, and it was to do as much of my labouring at home as I could. I didn't want vaginal examinations where they stick their fingers up and say how far dilated you were. That was going to break my oxytocin bubble, I tell you that. So, and they expect you to dilate a centimetre an hour. Oh, maths, man. My body don't follow maths. That's not a thing, is it? If I dare veer off that and, you know, only dilate a centimetre every 2 hours, they've got to tell me to go to hospital, and I don't want that in my head. So I declined all of that. I actually then as well had a cesarean birth plan for in case that is how things went. And it was, I wanted a clear screen. If they couldn't facilitate that, I didn't want a screen. I wanted all of the, I can't remember what they're called, the things that, like, they stick on you so they can monitor all your shit. I wanted those on my back, not on my chest, so I could facilitate breastfeeding right away. I wanted one arm out of the gown, so I had a boob ready. Yeah, there's loads of things. Like, you could have, like, a gentle C-section, and I had that as a backup birth plan. So I wanted to know all of the information, because if you don't know all of the information, you can't give informed consent and make the decisions that are best for you and your baby. Yes, they are medical professionals and there are guidelines, but everyone is different and it's your baby, your body, your rules.
And so you went without pain relief, which I think I've heard some amazing birth stories where, I think there was one particular one I heard of, and it was a doula who obviously very experienced with babies being born, and she didn't have any pain relief, and I think she had a water birth. And it just sounded like, because she didn't have the pain medication and it was a successful, smooth birth, it just sounded like the most incredible experience, because she was so present and she was able to sort of, I mean, they say with some of the painkillers, it fogs you out. You're not really there. I think with the injection in your spine, like, you can't, because it just numbs everything, you can't actually feel anything. And so you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that was a really big thing for me. I wanted to be present. I wanted to remember every single moment. And I wanted the challenge of feeling it all. I wanted to go through that to have my baby at the end. Not be numb and not feel anything and someone else pull my baby out for me. I wanted to do that. And I wanted to feel every single part of it, no matter how tough that got. Because in my mind, it's not an external pain cause that will be too much for you. It's not like if you hit me with a baseball bat, that would be too much. I'm not designed to get hit with a baseball bat. How can your body produce too much pain for you to cope with if it's a healthy labour? I just didn't believe my body would produce too much pain that it could cope with. I just don't think that's a thing. And so I was confident I could do it. Now, you think of that oxytocin. I needed to feel safe. I needed to feel spiritually warm, is what I want to say, happy, calm, all of that. Now, if I take 2 drags on gas and air and I feel out of control and tipsy, I don't really particularly enjoy getting drunk. I don't like feeling out of control. 2 drags of that, I can't get that back until that wears off. well, my oxytocin is not going to be a good time high, is it? And then all of a sudden, that hormone isn't going through smoothly. Maybe I feel pain a bit more. I'm not as relaxed. I can't focus on my breathing. Okay, so then it's getting more painful. I'm more uncomfortable. I need more gas in there. I'm more out of control. And that's just taking a drag of gas and air. And that's how it spirals. So when people are induced, it's a synthetic version of oxytocin in your body. Now, you can't measure how your body's going to react to that. So people who have an induction have horrific labours that are so painful that they end up begging for an epidural and C-section. Not, I'm generally speaking, most people have really, really rough experiences and come out traumatised because your body isn't designed to feel labour in that way. That's all a synthetic hormone. You can't measure it, can you? Like, oh, that's a bit much. Just turn the drip down a little bit more, a little bit more. Oh, yeah. Like, it doesn't work that way. They put a drip in, you're induced, we're getting your baby out, and that's it. So for me, I wanted to be in my cave with, you know, the hunter guard in the door, and we were warm and it was safe and it was, yeah, it was present and it was spiritual, and I loved it. I know that sounds insane, but I loved it, and I wish I could go and experience it all over again. I wish, like, if I got like a birthday wish, it would to be like go through my labor again. Loved it. It was incredible. And I wish every woman could have that positive experience, because if all women, or if the information was readily available to all women, I think women would have more of a positive experience. And that's something I'm really trying to facilitate. So I'm really working on it. It's really, really early stages, but building an online course, an online program for female athletes who want to become mothers, to
Bravo.
Training their nutrition, yes, for pregnancy and training to their pelvic floor awareness, and prolonging their career, the mental health of athletes and that athlete mindset, that athlete brain, that, you know, their ego doesn't do too well with slowing down, then birthing and what birth option would be best for you in your sport. That might be a planned C-section, that might be a home birth, considering the epidural and getting back to sport. That's a neural blocking pain relief, you know. Then there's balancing things like getting back to training, letting your body recover, balancing breastfeeding and training. Are you eating enough? Are you eating the right food? All of that. I'm really, really trying my best to figure out a way to put all of that together for female athletes to access. In a way of, I've done the research, so you don't have to. I'm going to put on the professionals I've worked with and that have helped me, because it's taken me the best part of a year and a half to figure this out for me. And I wish I knew all of this back then. We'll see. That is the plan.
And I think that's like, that sounds incredible, because I was going to ask, where did you find all of this information that you've now got? Because as you say, it's not readily available. So what resources have you managed to find?
So it is, I mean, it's there if you dive deep in research. I mean, I read about 15 different books when I was pregnant, from even like pregnancy nutrition or breastfeeding and the hormone differences and all that. I had to know all the science behind giving birth to make the right decision for me, and to know in that moment, is my baby in danger? Do I need medical assistance, or am I okay? Like, because I knew all of that, I trusted the knowledge and then my instinct. But it was just diving deep, pulling from different resources, Facebook groups, physiotherapists, and not talking to one, but a few. You know, I'm 8 months pregnant, can I still kick? Yeah, of course. No, only go swimming, be lazy. You know, like, it's pulling all those different opinions together. The research was unreal that I done, really. I mean, I feel like I deserve a master's degree, but no worries. Why is it that hard work for women to find out information on what the hell is going on with their body when they're having a baby? Like, if men were giving birth, all of that would be handed to them in a leaflet, I swear.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, me and Marina have had like a whole, in the last few years, we've had this big, I think we've sort of been in parallel with our understanding of like our hormone, just our cycle, like understanding, you know, that day 1 to 14, your estrogen's rising and all of this. And it was like, it's that same question of, why didn't we get taught this at school? Like, we should have been taught it when we were like 11.
I got taught how to put a condom on a cucumber. That's what I learned. Not about period.
No.
Not about my body at all. Stupid. No. It's ridiculous. And it's, Yeah. If it's there, also, if it's ready and available for women to access, they would have such a different experience.
Also, for a long time, Shanti and I, and most probably you, were trying to convince ourselves we're the same, like we're this. We're equal to men. If men do that many reps, we're gonna do them. If men go every day, we're gonna go. What's different? But then you start realizing, you know, men are just, their hormones are here, and we go beep 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 beep, 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 and you need to accommodate yeah. that, and you need to adapt. How can you talk to us a little bit about your nutrition? Like, how is it now different? Because so you're still breastfeeding, right?
Yeah, and this is, it drives me up the fucking wall. So I have to eat so many calories these days, right? I'm not complaining, but I keep getting told by loads of people, mainly women, actually, oh, you've only lost all that weight because you're breastfeeding. You look fantastic, still breastfeeding. Oh, you're eating that cake because you're breastfeeding. Well, that's such a negative narrative to set women up to fail, because when women choose to breastfeed because they're going to lose their baby weight quicker, then they have a really tough time breastfeeding and don't lose that weight. Awful. Traumatised. So you need to eat enough to have a really good milk supply. Obviously, making boob milk burns calories. So yes, you're likely to burn more calories because your body is feeding a tiny human. But for me, a really important thing was eating enough calories, because I burn out quite quickly. I've suffered from a bit of chronic fatigue syndrome before, and that's how I ended up working with Dean Kirk, the nutritionist. And so he's really, really good and really, really personal with my nutrition. So I used to walk around like 150 and fight at 135. I'm now just about walking around at 138, 139, and I'm eating like 2,500 calories a day. If not more, like it, I'm struggling to keep it on, and I've probably dropped a bit of muscle as well. You know, I'm not back to training full time, but my metabolism is through the roof. So how I approach food now is so differently to before, because I would be conscious of my weight, right? I don't want to put on too much, but I've got such a sweet tooth. I love food, you know, constant anxiety over food, constantly weighing myself. And then I had this thing where I kind of fell in love with my pregnant body, had a baby and was in awe about what I had managed to do, and thought, oh, I'm going to take the pressure off how I look and how much I weigh and put the pressure on how I feel. So my goal was to lose sort of the extra weight by 3 months of having Odin, mainly for my own sort of mental sanity. And I achieved that. Don't think it should be everyone's priority. If you're not in a weight division sport or you're not an athlete, don't worry about it. More important thing to worry about. For me, it was kind of a challenge I set myself, and it gave me something to focus on. Then I took a step back and I said to Dean that the weight is still kind of coming off. And he said, okay, eat more. And I stopped weighing myself and just kind of, we done some intuitive eating, but making sure I'm getting enough carbs and it's definitely enough protein and enough of all the nutrients and stuff. And I kind of like I didn't weigh myself for like 2 months, weighed myself. And I was like, oh, damn, I'm getting real lean. So I don't know how I'm going to get the food in me when I'm back to training full time, but that might have to be something I have to balance up. Like, do I need to think about training full time or stopping breastfeeding? Like, maybe my body can't cope very well with both. I don't want to be ill. I would like a long career. I don't want to be fatigued all the time. So yeah, my approach to like my diet and nutrition has changed so much, so much. It's incredible. It's great eating loads of food.
I think it's amazing how you're talking about, like, how your feeling is so important and the longevity you're after, because it feels like we've all overtrained and you feel sick, you're run down, but it feels like quite a normalized thing that people like run themselves into the ground. That's like kind of half expected. Like, if you're not on the verge of being exhausted, like in trainings that much, it feels like you're maybe, I don't know, it's like you're doubting.
You're not training hard enough.
Yeah, you don't want it enough or something, which is such a negative idea.
Oh, no, exactly. And that's like that athlete brain like latches onto that. Like, oh my God, I think I don't train hard enough, must train more. I used to train like 27 hours a week, and I was working as well. And now I look back, I think my central nervous system was blown. Like, I felt horrendous all the time, and I just keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. Now, especially with a baby and I don't have as much free time just to waste getting loads of training hours in for the sake of tallying them up. It's about the efficiency of training and the quality of the session. I would rather do an hour or two a day than 4 hours, and half of it I'm not mentally present, the drilling's not, the technique's not sharp, you know, I'm so shattered, I can't wait just to get home to have a sleep. You know, now I've got the hour to 2 hours, I'm really working on being mentally present and taking all of that in. I know that I can bosh that out and train really, really hard, but I can rest and do the same tomorrow. That's sustainable. And that's something that Dean is really, really good at. Mm-hmm. When I first chatted to him, he was like, oh my God, you don't stop talking about how much you weigh and how you look and how you look at training. How about, how do you feel at training? Because it sounds like you're not feeling so good. And I was like, well, no, obviously, that's MMA, bro, that's the life. We all feel rough, right? And he's like, no, you're never going to get to a pro career if you carry on going the way you, like, you're not getting paid for this shit yet. What are you giving up, like, your whole life for training that much? Like, it's not even good quality training. Take a step back, train a little less, eat a little more. You know, and so now my whole approach has shifted, and so has my body confidence. Like, oh, people joke, my family joke, they're like, oh, you love yourself so much. And I'm like, yeah, I really do. Like, I really do. And my body is incredible. I love the way it looks. I love what it's achieved. I love how it feels when I train. I feel strong. And, like, yeah, even like my skin is better because I'm eating enough and my nails are better and I'm injured so much less. And like, I've had a baby like a year ago, you know? So it just, that whole shift has made such a difference for me.
Wow. I think that's so good to vocalize. And I think me and Marina, I think have had similar experiences where we're like, right, okay, we're not gonna, when it's like period, like PMS week, it's like, okay, and tone it down. And I know for me, like, I totally, what you're saying totally resonates. And I think it kind of feels like a new concept. And maybe it applies more to women, and maybe that's why it's a newer concept, because women are now getting more involved, yeah, you know, chasing that more. And actually we do have to be more intuitive and listen to ourselves. Again, because we're doing this.
Which goes completely, this is opposite to what, you know, you might think for athletes in combat sports, because you constantly hear that, come on, push, grind.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm not 100%, mate.
Yeah. I'm going to write down the words. Yeah, if I was to write down the words I associated with the training like 2 years ago, it'd be like push, exhaustion, no pain, no gain, you know, all that sort of approach. That's, yeah, bro. You do you. You train like that, that's fine. I'm not even going to begin to explain why I don't train like that anymore, because you haven't even got the ability to grasp the concept of hormone differences, of what it's like to train when you're actually bleeding, like the stress. Am I leaking? Mm-hmm. Am I not? Do I need to change my tampon? Like, oh my God, you don't even, they don't even get it. And then add on having a baby, like my whole body has changed. I'm suffering with the prolapse. My hips are wider than they used to be. I don't have the same explosive power than I did right now. That needs a lot of training, all of that. So I'm not even going to explain to you. You just train how you want to train. If I'm going to miss an evening of training, I'm not going to justify it, because you're a man and you're not going to get it. I've got nothing else. that's it, isn't it? You're just not going to get it. But I am going to start backing myself, because if I don't look out for me, no one else is going to be looking out for me, because you don't get it. And there's not enough support. There's not enough of us women in combat sports. There's not enough information out there for me to let anyone else take that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And not only that, we have to train with that mental load all the time. Imagine just turning up to training, just being able to train every night without a second thought about anything else. Incredible. And they have the cheek to moan their tired.
Do you have many women at your gym?
No. So I have a few, like, I have one female kickboxer. She's young. She's just turned 18, I think. Just does tournaments and stuff. And then a couple of the juniors and the other kids' classes, there's some females. But in terms of, like, on the path of taking it seriously, no. I'm the only female in the MMA classes as well. like the wrestling and the grappling and stuff. So there's occasionally there'll be a few women in the kickboxing classes, but you know, they're there for fun, fitness, losing a bit of weight, feeling a bit better about themselves. Happy to train with them. Absolutely love it. Love seeing other females in the gym. But not at the level I'm taking it. No. Lonely journey.
And do you think that impacts your training, not having other women to sort of fight with? Because then do you get the opportunity to train with women, other gyms or anything?
No, I haven't had. There did used to be another female fighter, Hannah, and we were training together a lot. It was nice, you know, like you're both on your period and you're like, oh, rough week, you know. Oh, check. Keep an eye out for me in case I'm leaking all over the mat. Yeah, you too, bro. Like, that was nice. And training with boobs, you know, oh, God, I keep getting kicked in the tit again, you know. It's nice to have someone that just kind of gets it. But actually we clashed, really, really, really clashed in training. Rather than pulling from each other's strengths and weaknesses, it was just hyper-competitive. We ended up not getting on very well and she sort of left. I think that's more common than people talk about in gyms as well. But I will be doing some more training with some of the women in the UK. I'm happy to sort of travel up and down the country and get some training in. And there's a couple of female fighters or ex-fighters that have had babies around the same time I had Odin. So I'm definitely going to connect with them. Yeah, it's something I want to do. I think it's something I need. Training with the boys, just the boys, is tough. As I said, they just don't get it. I mean, you guys know that. They just don't get it. And women train different. Like, women are savage. Boys kind of rely on their strength all the time, I think, and can get a bit sloppy because you're a girl and you're lighter. And then you train the female and you're like, oh, damn, she's bringing it. So,
yes.
You know, it's not.
I can totally feel that. Sometimes you go training, you're like, oh my God, the girls are way more scary.
I mean, the lighter guys as well. The lighter guys look, their technique is so much better because they have to deal with massive people that use their strength.
Yeah, I kind of train better with the lighter boys because they've had like part of that experience. 2 seconds, I'm just going to plug my laptop in. There we go. Didn't want it dying mid conversation, did we?
Very nice. Good. No. So. What is your response to the idea that we've kind of already covered it, but like the idea that now you're a mum, like you should probably be focusing on that. You should stop focusing on something which takes up so much of your time.
I've had that a lot. Like, I get that most people, women and men, don't get the female MMA thing. You know, most of my friends are like, why would you choose that for a career? That's mental. Let alone doing it whilst you've got a baby. I just come back to my core beliefs each time because I do find it quite like a triggering comment. And I think you have to be the change you want to see in the world. Just because I know when they say it, it's not a me thing, it's a them thing. Because they wouldn't have the confidence to chase something like that. And when I look at their lives, I don't think they're as fulfilled as they could be. And so that is coming out in an insecurity of them. So I try to kind of release that and let them have that. You know, don't take advice from someone whose life you wouldn't want to live, that sort of thing. You know, and I think, look, I know my cause. I know what I'm following. I want it to be a common thing that women chase their dreams even though they're parents. Like, that's what I want the world to look like. So I've got to do that. I've got to be the change I want to see in the world, and I've got to be unapologetic about it because it's not a shameful thing. It's not a wrong thing. It's not wrong for my family. My kid's so happy. I'm happy. And that's the other thing. Mothers are celebrated if they're selfless. Like, oh, she does anything for her kids. She lives for her kids. Why is that celebrated? Like, how about if I'm not happy, how can I possibly help my child to be happy? So I put my happiness first. And that sounds really selfish. I would rather celebrate being selfish than being selfless, because my child will grow up being selfless if I'm selfless. I want him to know that he chooses him, his things, his goals, his happiness over anything else. And he disappoints everyone else before he disappoints himself. I can't tell him that and do the opposite. So I'm going to show him that. And that's sort of what I come back to when I get comments like that, or or even people on Instagram that message you, or even like family and friends. That's just what I have in my head. And I think I'm not going to say explain it to you because you don't get it, but I know what I'm doing. And I thank you for commenting, but no, thank you.
People on Instagram would say something.
Oh, I've had some messages. Oh, I've had some messages.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because people are happy with their own lives, so they question other people's.
But then you wouldn't have that for a male athlete that is a parent. Nobody would question their motive.
No, and it's nobody would say, "Oh, isn't it?
You need to be a parent."
Yeah, you bet. That's because the primary caregiving is left to the mother most times, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what we're for. But it sort of sounds, is the birth of your child, has it made that message that you want to, and the sort of the standard, not standard, that's the wrong word, but the example you want to set, is that sort of clarified that for you? Because it sort of sounds like you're like, right, I've got to be the role model that I've got to live the life that I want him to live. And so in a way, that sort of, has that sort of helped you really focus on that, or has that always just been there?
Yeah, no, I think it has. I think especially as I've overcome all of these hurdles to get back to training and stuff. Yeah, and I, because I haven't had the support of my family in the way perhaps I could do with it, I want to make sure I have that for Odin. I took myself to therapy because I wanted to unlearn things from my childhood and my parents' parenting and my childhood traumas so that I didn't press that onto him. So I'm really, for like a young mum, I'm incredibly self-aware. And yeah, like, I don't know, if I look at the moments in my childhood where my mum didn't put my mum thought she was putting my happiness first, it's when I had those unhappy moments. Every single time she put her happiness first, I followed suit. And yeah, the message is very clear, and it's, I don't know. Obviously, Odin is my priority, and his health and safety is my priority, but I'm not going to make myself unhappy to make him happy, because no child's happy if their parent's unhappy. So if I focus on me, like, he's going to bounce off of that. And that's just the way I see parenting. That's the way I see that dynamic. Not a lot of people agree with that, but not a lot of people, unfortunately, in the world are very self-aware or would have gone and unlearned a lot of the things they carry from their childhood and their parents.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot of self-awareness and work, I think, to be able to reflect on.
It's hard work, yeah. But, you know, like, it's... I'm happy to work hard at being a better version of myself, which means I'll be a better parent. I don't question that. If there's ever a hard work I'm going to do, that's the hard work I'll choose.
Yeah, definitely. And so can you we're coming to the end, I think. Can you just sort of summarise maybe like a bit of advice that you might give to yourself a year and a half ago, like in a nutshell? Just,
I'm not good at the nutshell thing. I think I would probably tell myself to trust the process a little bit more, that to stop having the doubts just because you don't have someone close next to you that's done what you want to do. You know, if you haven't fought by the time your baby's a year old, that's really not going to be the ruining of your professional fighting career, because if you can fight when he's one, you can fight when he's two. It's not like I've had a significant amount of time out of training, you know, like, just enjoy training. Your time will come when you're back to training full time and you're back to cutting weight and all that sort of thing. And most importantly, enjoy your baby. You know, like, don't miss out on those incredible moments when they're squishy and newborn and they're just like an external part of you, and they really need you for a wrestling session that you feel left out of. You've got plenty of that. You can't get those moments back. So I think that above all, obviously I really want a fight career and I'm a mother, but I am so glad we've been in lockdown with the gyms being shut, because I've been forced to have that. I can't imagine what I would have missed out on. So I think trust the process, but enjoy your baby, you'll get back before you know it. Probably be the thing I'd say. Probably wouldn't listen, but.
Thank you. That's brilliant. Because I think that, again, that is that just enjoying your baby.
Yeah. You can get back to fighting one day. Like, it's have the confidence in yourself. You'll make it happen. If that's what you really want to achieve, then you'll get back there. Just don't miss out on those magical moments.
Yeah. And Molly, you're 23.
Wow.
You'll be fighting for a long time.
You've got
so much time. The standard last question of every podcast that we do is, what are you fighting for?
That's such a tough question, it could be broad or
specific, up to you.
I think I'm fighting for all the times in my life that I didn't fight, that I didn't feel I could fight, that I should have fought, all those vulnerable moments when I wish I'd had the strength and confidence to fight for what I believed in, for security, for safety, whatever it was. I think I fight for all those moments and for all the other women that have had those moments too.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
We can't wait to see what you're gonna have.
I think it's definitely been our pleasure. You've got so much knowledge and so much experience in something which I think is often, as you say, so not given the weight that it should, not given the support. And I think your sort of story of self-discovery and, you know, finding those answers is so, like, you'll help so many people just by talking about it.
Yeah, I really hope so. And I hope it'll be the start of a small change in the world in the right direction.
I think so. Thank you,
Molly. And do please share all of the things you've learned through the journey.
Oh, I will. Don't you worry.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast. And credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk and check out our website for more content.